Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Torres. I'll be your host today, joined by my co-hosts, Mike Carter and Dave Funnel. On today's episode, we'll be doing our beat writer roundup, where we're going to take a look at a few beat writer articles. We're going to identify some players who have been showing improved skills over the past 30 days, both hitters and pitchers. We're going to be talking injuries with Dave, bullpens with Mike, and as always, we'll be ending with our mental health minute. But first, let me check in with my co-hosts here. Fellas, how has this past fantasy week treated you? And Mike, I'll start with you.
Well, it hasn't treated me too badly for an old fat guy. It's not too bad. I'm disappointed in a couple of things. You know, I've made some moves in Fab the last couple of weeks that I thought were going to be, you know, immediate payouts. But as things usually go, it takes time, you know, to recover from different things. So Glarf is going pretty well. TGFBI has been horrible. I've been bringing up the rear in TGFBI, 12th or 13th place all season. It's been kind of a nightmare. Mostly my pitching has betrayed me there. And Tout, I've been anywhere from 7th to 12th as well. It's I've got a lot of injuries. Merrill got hurt again, and he's killing me. You know, like I need a Jackson Merrill to be Jackson Merrill, and even when he's healthy, he's kind of been almost an empty batting average guy. So it's not been great, but I'm keeping my head above water. It's the middle of June. There's a long way to go. I'm hopeful that some of these guys that I've added are going to start making, you know, paying some dividends here pretty soon.
Who do you have? Who are some of the recent pickups that that you're counting on?
Oh, let's take a look here and see. So last weekend, I spent quite a bit on Fab last weekend in terms of volume, not so much in terms of cost, you know. I had, let's see, oh, wrong thing. Sorry, I clicked on the wrong thing. So I did some stuff in Glarf that tried to make the team a little bit stronger. My offense has been really good in there. My pitching has not been. So I was able to add a couple of guys last weekend. I got Colton Gordon from Houston, nice. who I like very much. I was able to re-add Brian Bayo again, who I have high hopes for, you know, coming back and taking Michael Lorenzen out of my lineup, which is helpful. I always seem to end up with Michael Lorenzen. He never really does anything for me.
Yeah, what are you expecting at this point from?
Yeah, just like, you know, like a six starter, you know, numbers. But every once in a while he does that, and then he blows up. So, and then I also spent some Fab money this past weekend on Reed Detmers, with the hopes that the Angels may trade Kenley Jansen. With my luck, what will happen is they'll trade Detmers and keep Jansen, and he won't close anywhere. But he's been nasty, and we're going to talk about him in a little bit, I'm sure. But, I need Spencer Strider to be Spencer Strider. I need Zach Wheeler to be Zach Wheeler. And that was the team that I also had Gerrit Cole on, so I lost him right off the bat. So my 3A strategy has not really worked out well.
Right, right. Okay, and that's the one. Glarf is the one that me, you, and Dave all kind of did together, right? Like we spent that one day.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time. Yeah, I spent a lot of time texting you guys, and that was the draft that remarkably you told me to go in all in on James Wood, which I thank you for because that's turned out to be really good for me.
I have no, you know what? That makes me feel better because I have no James Wood. Uh-huh. And, you know, today we're recording this Thursday. He hits two more home runs, up to 20 on the year, full on breakout. Yeah, and I have him nowhere, but that does make me feel better to know that at least you have him on your Glarf team.
But one that you got wrong in that day, Chris.
I didn't get any wrong. Come on.
You did. You got one wrong. We brought it up last week, and that was PCA. He's been pretty good.
I told
good.
You not to take PCA.
Yeah, I took him like in the eighth round, and you were like, no, that's too high. It probably was. It probably was.
Well, I mean, now who cares? Like, who cares what the guy's performing like a first round player. So that's a win. Dave, what about you, man? How has the fantasy week been for you?
For me, it was great because this Sunday I finally dropped the hammer in Fab. It was great.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. You know me. I keep my Fab like Scrooge McDuck. It's just like, it's
why, you know, like Mike, tell me, like, I am not surprised at all that is Dave's approach to Fab. Just knowing you, like your personality, like that fits. But anyway, go ahead.
It sure does.
But Jacob Mizorowski and Yuri Perez dropped the hammer on both. Wow. And I just missed out on Yusei Kikuchi. I was going for the trifecta for pitching there, but I got Mizorowski, beat it out by $3. And then Yuri Perez, I overbid by a lot, but I got the guys I wanted. Okay.
Does that bother you guys when you overbid? It drives me crazy.
Sometimes. Yeah. It depends. It depends how much I'm into the player. Like, if it's someone that I just am absolutely, like, I have to have this guy, if I overbid, it's like, whatever. I got my guy, you know, and, like, it's going to happen sometimes. Mm-hmm. If there's someone where I'm just like, you know, maybe it's like a big name and I feel like I have to kind of bid a lot to be competitive, you know, and then it turns out that I overbid by like $40. I'm like, that's really annoying. So yeah. It depends on the player.
Yeah.
That's a good answer.
All right. Let me ask you, Dave, with Yuri, real quick, I'm a little concerned. I mean, the skills that he's shown in these two starts have been subpar, to say the least. He's not getting swing and miss. We're not really seeing the Yuri that we saw in previous years. So what was the thought process there on going all in on him?
Just for the upside, I know coming back from major injury like this, the command and control will be hard for him. Mm-hmm. But my hope is that A, with volume, and B, with some strikeout upside, he can help me with my team. But I do agree, like, he's going to be a star, but I think it's going to be as of next year. I don't think it's going to be this year. I bid up on both just in case I didn't get one or the other. I didn't think I'd get Mizorowski. I bid 111 and I got him. But I got Yuri Perez as well, as almost like felt like a compensation, but I'm pretty happy with both. And with Perez, his upside will probably be capped next year. We'll start to see it, but maybe, who knows, by the end of this year, we might start to see it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's two starts, so I don't think we can jump to any definitive conclusions, you know, like I think he might just need some starts to ramp up. And then we see kind of like with Strider, right? Like Strider looked like crap, especially the second time coming back from the hamstring injury. And now, you know, last start was dominant. I think he pitches tonight, so we'll mm-hmm. see what happens. But all right, moving on to our first segment here, we're going to be looking at a few beat writer articles, and I'm going to pass it to you, Mike. You had an article that was talking about some playing time, I guess a lot of roster moves that the Nationals were making, and playing time that could come as a result of that. So.
Yeah, you know, I took a look at, we all subscribe to these articles on a you know, weekly basis that we get, and the one that attracted me was reading about the Nationals, who I find to be a really interesting team. I don't think they're that far away from being pretty good, even though the record doesn't show that right now. But Jessica Camerato had a nice article this week about the flurry of roster moves that the Nationals had this week, and I thought that might have some fantasy impact when we kind of take a look at it. Brady House, a third baseman in their system, you know, who's a first-round pick from a couple years back, big power guy, was selected from AAA Rochester. The corresponding move was they sent Jose Tena down. I guess they've seen enough of him at third base. They also recalled Dalen Lyle, who was an outfielder that they had in AAA Rochester as well. House is the more interesting of the two prospects. He's their number three prospect overall in their system, was hitting .304 with 13 home runs so far in the season. And he plays a pretty good third base, and they need somebody to play there. They've had a hole there for quite a while, really, probably since Ryan Zimmerman was there. They haven't really had a third baseman that they can really bank on. He's got a little bit of swing and miss in his game, and so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that power goes for him. They also recalled Dalen Lyle, and in that corresponding move for that, they sent down Robert Hassel III. I was a little surprised to see Hassel get called up anyway. I don't know if you guys were at the same time. The knock on him in Arizona when we've seen him down there the last couple of years, Chris, has been that he's kind of small for his I know this sounds weird, but he's small for his size. He doesn't have a lot of power, kind of a gap-to-gap guy. He didn't really hit very well, although he did hit a home run. People didn't really rush to pick him up in too many leagues that I was in. He was hovering around a 2 or 3% roster situation. But Lyle is a guy that they called up and had hit pretty well. And he was here for in the major leagues for a little while, got sent back down in May, and then they brought him back up here, and he was hitting 281 down in AAA with a home run, six RBIs, three doubles, and an eight-game stint back in Rochester, and they brought him back up. The thing that is interesting about Lyles is that about Lyle, is that Davey Martinez is a real big fan of his. You know, the numbers don't really indicate the amount of playing time that he's going to get him, but Davey Martinez responded that he liked his poise, that he felt like he understood the strike zone very well, that he has some really good at-bats, and that he takes walks. And the Nationals are looking for guys that can get on base. So that was kind of an interesting week for them. I don't know that anybody saw House getting called up as soon as he did. He was their first round pick in 2021. It'll be interesting to see how that kind of plays out for them. But I thought that was a really good article with some fantasy implications, especially, I don't know about you guys, but to me, it really feels like third basemen are hurt all the time. You know, Matt Chapman's banged up with this hand thing. Rafael Devers isn't playing third base anymore, right? You know, so like people seem like they're lacking good options at third base. And I write about the waiver wire category boosters at Rotoballer every week, and I'm almost always recommending some level of third baseman that can help you out in a pinch in the short term, at least. And House was a guy that I wrote about today in an article that came out this morning talking about if you're looking for that kind of quick power burst, depending on how quickly he adjusts to being in the show, he might be a guy that you want to take a look at this weekend and spend a little bit of fab on.
Yeah, and House is playing every day, batting fifth since he got called up.
Right.
I mean, this is like super small sample, but, you know, it's good to see for someone who had a lot of swing and miss in their game. Like, he's come up and he's looked poised. He's walking more than he's striking out. Will that continue? Probably not. Steamer hasn't projected rest of the way for a 141 ISO, 27.5% K rate, and a 234 batting average, and not really a speed asset, has him for two stolen bases. So someone definitely, I think he's a deep league play, but definitely someone to keep an eye on. And Daylen Lyle, looks like kind of the replacement for Alex Call. And it's funny because he's a similar type player to Alex Call in terms of their skills. And it looks like he's kind of been a one-to-one replacement starting the Nationals' last four games. So, and he's playing in right field. So I don't think, again, another deep league guy. And we'll see. You're going to have to monitor how the playing, if he keeps that consistent playing time. All right. We got to talk about, I mean, I know everybody's talked about the Devers trade, right? Like, that has been the talk of baseball, shocking everybody with the Red Sox trading him to the San Francisco Giants. But Dave, you had an article that you thought was interesting because it looked at it more from this being a positive thing for the Red Sox, where it seems like the reception has been, what the heck are the Red Sox doing?
Yeah, this was more of, I don't know if it was a hot take or if it was just trying to make something out of the lemons that they were given, but Ian Brown on MLB.com does a great job covering the Red Sox, and he went over three different factors that are available now for the Red Sox because of the trade and some openings that were coming up. So he categorized it into three different things. The first thing he said was the team chemistry should be improved. Now, it's a wonder there might have been some underlying issue there behind closed doors. I mean, Devers refusing to play first. So, like, why should I? Well, if this guy doesn't want to do it, why should I? And even when Tristan Casas went down, he still said no. So, you know, when he left, it wasn't really much of, you know, like the players weren't too upset about it. So, you know, now this opens up the DH spot, which can really help the players' bodies, because having one person play DH every single night, it takes a toll on the bodies of everyone else. It takes them out of the rhythm because it might cause more sitting than starting. So the team chemistry should be improved there.
Mm-hmm.
They also talked about financial flexibility. I mean, the Red Sox could use a starter. Do they go for it at the trade deadline? Maybe if the Rangers struggle, go after DeGrom. or if the Cardinals struggle, go after Sonny Gray, stuff like that. Or, and I'm spitballing here, by the way, this part of these names. Or maybe they go for it in the offseason, like Dylan Cease is a free agent, Framber's a free agent. So they have the financial flexibility. Will they do it? That's the biggest question.
Yeah. Or do they use that money to sign up some of those young guys that they got now to long-term contracts? I mean, is that a mistake to think about signing Roman Anthony or Mayer now before they get too far ahead of themselves?
Yeah, I mean, they could do that. It's worked for the Braves, and it seems like the Red Sox are doing that, you know, with Christian Campbell and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's just they need to use that. Well, they have the money, so they need to use it, and they need to use it wisely. And then the last category that he said was it should open up for Masataka Yoshida. Mm-hmm. Now, he's a guy that I've liked a lot this year. I like him specifically in points leagues, but I like him because he's just a good hitter. And he was actually healthy at the plate at spring. He just couldn't throw. And he's been trying to work back from shoulder surgery. But now that Devers, with Devers as the everyday DH, there was never any room for Yoshida. But now with that opening, they're already talking about bringing him back early, maybe starting at a platoon with, I think it was Rob Refsnyder, and then going from there. He's a good hitter, and he makes a lot of money, so they need to play him. So
he might be on the move too then. I mean, he was a guy from the previous regime, right? So
yeah,
if they're just trying to get rid of bad contracts here,
yeah,
he, I think, would be another guy to go. But we'll see. You know, it's going to get interesting with the playing time. They got all these young guys. Abreu is coming back, I think, today or tomorrow. Willie Abreu, that is. And, with Yoshida on the way back. So there's still, I think there's still a little bit of a logjam. I got to sit down and actually look at, you know, what's how that all plays out here. We're going to transition to our next segment here, and we're going to take a look at some hot hitters and pitchers. And something that I like to do, I'm looking at this almost every day. I have a custom leaderboard on FanGraphs where I pick out all the stats that I think are most important. And, I just filter and try to find guys that stand out that maybe are flying a little bit under the radar. I want to be able to get ahead of, you know, the field and spot these skills early so I can identify like who I need to pick up. Some of these guys doesn't matter. Like, you know, in non-trade leagues, it is what it is. I don't have, Aaron Judge. So what am I going to do? But I just like to look at this to give me a sense of who's really showing the skills that matter. And you know, are they getting lucky? Are they getting unlucky? So I got a few hitters here, and I'm going to start out with Nick Kurtz, who's had a really nice week. Seems like playing in Sacramento. We talked about that this offseason. We're like, how is this going to work out? You know, and I think it's played even more hitter friendly than we thought it would. And Nick Kurtz is definitely benefiting from that. And looking at his skills since he returned from the IL, it backs up everything that he's doing. According to FanGraphs, which I know there's two different hard hit rates that people look at. FanGraphs has their own version. StatCast has their own. It seems like most people have gravitated towards StatCast. I still stick with FanGraphs because, I don't know, I've just found it to be like more predictive. Like when I see someone's hitting the ball hard using their metric, usually there's some element, like, I don't know, my own algorithm that I use. Like if someone's hitting the ball above a 40% rate, like I feel pretty confident that we're going to see at least some improved production in the immediate future. So Kurtz has been hitting the ball at a 49% hard hit rate, not striking out, hitting the ball in the air at a 57% clip, not chasing, being aggressive in the zone. All of the skills that he's showing are backing up what people said about him, you know, coming up as a prospect, and really he's paying off those fantasy managers who invested in him and picked him up in Fab this year. So my question to you guys is, with Kurtz, I mean, how highly should we be ranking him among first basemen? Mike, do you have any thoughts? Like, where would you rest of season put Nick Kurtz among first basemen?
Well, you know, I really like him a lot. And when in my home league, it's a, you know, an at will free agent process. So it's just kind of whenever you get to a guy, you know, if you, you beat somebody at 3 o'clock in the morning to get to the guy, you get him. There's, it's a $10 transaction fee or whatever. So I'd been struggling at first base. I had, been a big believer in Jake Berger this year. That obviously has not worked out for me. I was using Nathaniel Lowe for a while. That worked out okay for a while, but then it didn't. And so a couple of weeks ago when Kurtz got the call, I snagged him right away. I went right onto the ESPN website and grabbed him. And at first I was sort of lamenting that. I'm like, oh, it looks like I'm going to get a home run or two a week and about 10 strikeouts. But absolutely everything you said is right on. This is a player to me that when you look at first base and some of the options that are out there, this is a top 10 guy, I think, the rest of the way if you really want to, you know, split to brass tacks. He's already got 8 home runs. And since he's come back from being hurt, he's really looked the part, hitting the ball extremely hard, as you mentioned, Chris. Really looks like a guy that has that staying power. Not even a year after he gets drafted, you know, he's got the 22% barrel rate, like you said. You know, just really, really hitting the ball hard, and he's fun to watch. You know, he's putting the ball in play. What I really like is that the strikeout rate is starting to go down. You know, yeah. he was known for, you know, having a high strikeout volume when he first started. In 70 at bats that he had in May, he struck out 24 times. It's pretty high. Mm-hmm. This month he's got 33 at bats so far. He struck out 9 times. So it's a pretty close to the same, but if you look at the strikeouts, instead of those 2 and 3 strikeout games, you're starting to get into those 1 strikeout games. And then last night he had 3 hits and another home run. I think he's finding his way.
Yep. Any Kurtz, Dave, did you snag him anywhere?
I didn't. I wasn't able to bid high enough earlier on him, but I agree with him. Pardon?
That's why you had the hammer.
That's why I had the hammer this week. Yeah. I agree with everything you guys are saying. My only worry is I don't know if, like, it was too early of a sample for his early struggles. So I consider this the first stage, you know, whenever we get prospects that get called up. If pitchers start, if they adapt to him, mm-hmm. is Kurtz going to be able to keep that strikeout rate low enough? He's got
here's the Debbie Downer. Here he goes.
The thief of joy has returned.
The thief of joy. Here we go.
Do you guys remember that old SNL skit that they used to do with Rachel Dratch?
Yeah,
she was Debbie called Downer. Debbie Downer. Yeah, I think Dave's getting a new nickname.
Davey Downer.
I love it.
If you can afford to have Nick Kurtz, okay. I'm rostering Masatiko Yoshida everywhere. Don't have room for Nick Kurtz.
Davey Downer sounds like a good title for the episode. Yeah, I like that. you know, interesting. So I was just pulling up rest of season projections, and you know, I'm a nerd with this stuff. But I was looking at the Bat X, which is, they're always pretty bearish on prospects mm-hmm. and young players. So rest of the way, they have Kurtz hitting 12 home runs. This is in 248 plate appearances and batting .227. So, I mean, if we're just looking at projections, yeah, I guess you're right, Dave. I mean, there is some reason for, I guess, skepticism that he's going to maintain this strikeout rate. But we'll see. I know that Bad X has been wrong before. Projections have been wrong before. But Dave's never been wrong.
It's so, a risk I'm willing to take, you know. We'll see what happens.
Like guys like that are just like true power bats. Like I was looking at, especially in like a 15 teamer, I was looking in my main event and there's nobody, man. Like the power options out there are putrid. And I'm like, this is going off on another player, but like I'm so pissed at myself because Michael Toglia was available in both of my mains. Yeah, I know we talked about him enough this one. I know you hate him, Mike.
No, but, I don't hate him. I don't hate anybody.
Okay. You do not like him as a baseball player.
I just, when Dave brings him up, I just say no, Dave. That's all I say in the group chat.
I think you're going to regret that. I mean, so anyway, what I was saying is that he was available. He was only like 25% rostered across main events. And I remember thinking, I'm like, you know, maybe it's time to stash him because I can't imagine the Rockies are going to keep him down like, you know, the whole season here. So like they're going to bring him back up and just see he's going to play every day and there's no other power on the waiver wire. And in one league, I had him as like one of my backup bids, ended up getting Jordan Walker instead, which was another bust. Like I'm done with Jordan Walker. Don't let me bid on Jordan Walker ever again. Okay. If I even mention his name, I want you like you do with Dave, like no Dave, just no Chris, no. Like just don't do it. Okay. I'm so done with him.
I thought, is that in the same class as Tyler O'Neill for you or?
Oh yeah, we can't. So this is a, you know, we're on the pitch.
We're going off the rails. We're going off the rails here.
Yeah. We can't say like, I mean, we couldn't share the text I sent you about Tyler O'Neill on the podcast because we are a family show. But yeah, I'm done with him too. So
anyway, yes, you are clearly. Yes.
Yes. Yes. But anyway, moving on to another hitter that has been super hot. And actually today hit another two home runs. And this is someone not really known for their power. And that is Alejandro Kirk.
I love him. I love him.
I have him everywhere. He's one of my most rostered players, just where he was going in drafts around like pick 250, 270. About 250. It just seemed like a perfect guy, going to play every day, at least, you know, give me a decent batting average. But I think we're seeing a little bit more with the power. And I was surprised to see that among hitters with at least 30 plate appearances over the past 30 days, he has the second highest hard hit percentage at 53%. And he's maintaining all of the contact that he normally does. And the only thing with Kirk, and this continues to be an issue, especially for someone who we know he is not a fast man, hits a ball on the ground too much. He has even during this time, he's got a 55% ground ball rate. So that's the one caveat with Kirk. But this level of power, you know, a max EV even of 112, like this is all stuff that we have not seen from Kirk. So I'm wondering, is this, you know, he's not, how old is he? He's 25 or something like that.
26. He's 26.
So still a young guy, especially for a catcher. Is this him breaking out? Like, am I jumping the gun here or is this just a hot streak? Mike, what do you think?
No, this is the most he's going to ever play, right? So, you know, they finally got him out from the ghost of Danny Jansen, who's another Dave guy. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I wanted to pick up Kirk and Dave said, no, pick up Toglia. And I said, I'm just kidding, guys. That didn't really happen. But I'll tell you the truth. In a couple of leagues, I have Kirk in a spot where I'm not having him catch. I'm using him in a utility spot because he's been so hot. I think this could be a breakout, honestly. I don't know what he's going to do power-wise for you. I mean, I think double-digit home runs, obviously, you know, with what he's doing right now, that's clearly on the table. But are we talking 15, maybe 16? I think that's probably more like it. But the hard hit percentage, the way that this guy just carries himself, he's a great catcher too. And people don't really spend enough time talking about that. You know, StatCast, you look at all the hitting stuff and we have a tendency to focus on that, obviously, because we're fantasy players. But if you look at his catching stats, the guy is just phenomenal. And they really don't have anybody else there. You know, now that Jansen is gone, they don't really have anybody there to challenge him for a lot of plate appearances. I think it's a breakout. I think he's been waiting to break out for a couple years. And this looks like it's going to be the year where if he stays healthy, he's going to get the most at-bats that he's ever had. I think the most he's ever had in the season and is a little over 400, maybe 425 or so. So I think he's really going to get past that as long as he stays healthy. And you got to love where he's hitting in the lineup too, right? I mean, he's in a stacked lineup and he's hitting cleanup, you know? And so the fact that Bichette has been resurgent, Dave, shout out to you for that. I didn't believe, and he's been really good. Addison Barger batting second, and then Vlad hitting third. You know, they got a good lineup. That top part of their lineup is really good. I really love Kirk right now.
Yeah, and he's played 10 straight games.
Yep.
There are days that he doesn't catch, they're having him DH. So I don't know if that, especially if they're active at the trade deadline, I don't know how long that's going to last, but he should be in any 12-team league. I think even one catcher, he's viable. He's 61% rostered in CBS leagues right now. So I think I really like Kirk.
Yeah, what are people thinking? Is it because he doesn't have a lot of home runs? I mean, this guy is just killing batting average right now and scoring runs.
Yeah, to find a catcher that has, you know, 280 to 300 in their range of outcomes, that's there's not many of those. So, and if there's a little bit more power that he's tapping into, then he's going to be super valuable for fantasy. Speaking of power, let's talk Maximus. And we're not talking about the A's Max Muncy. We're talking Dodgers Max Muncy, who's rocking. Ooh, you know, let me not take anything away from the A's Max Muncy. He's been actually doing really well. Mm-hmm. I think he's definitely someone to look at as a pickup, you know, even in 12 teamers, given the skills he's showing. But I wanted to talk about the Dodgers Max Muncy, who's got a 1.055 OPS over the last 30 days. He has just been crushing the ball. And the narrative around that, whether this is coincidence or not, I don't think it is, but at the end of April, he was terrible. I mean, he was having an abysmal year, losing playing time. Like, he was being dropped everywhere. He was even dropped in some main events in 15-team leagues. Then he actually got glasses. He had an astigmatism and had found glasses to improve his vision. Well, wouldn't you know, seeing the ball helps you hit the ball. And since then, Muncy has been one of the hottest hitters in baseball. You know, he's hitting the ball hard. He's walking more than he's striking out. We're seeing like prime Max Muncy, maybe even better than what we saw during his prime. So this was someone a lot of people gave up on. Where are you guys at on Muncy? Do you buy this, that this procedure was kind of like what he needed and now he's unlocked this new level? What are you thinking about Muncy moving forward here?
I'm in on him. The fact, like you said, the fact that he can see, that is a big deal. but he's walking at such a great, like, he's got such a good eye, no pun intended, at the plate now. he's hitting the ball hard and he's staying healthy, which is something that he hadn't been able to do for quite a while. And he's in a loaded lineup, so he's going to hit people in, or he's going to hit them. He's going to be hit home. And like you mentioned earlier, Mike, at third base, it's such a fluid position with a lot of people in and out, rotating in and out with health. As long as he's in there, he's going to play. He's doing a great job. So I'd be in on him if I have him, maybe try and sell high if I could, but I'd buy in and keep it ride it until, you know, can't ride it anymore.
You know what's interesting skills-wise with Muncy too? I mean, he's hitting the ball hard, doing everything that you look for. But what's changed from him in previous years is that his in-zone swing percentage, now for the year, it's 67%. During the past 30 days, though, he's been around 72, 73. Now, previous years, just to give some context, he was around like 57, 59, like always in that high 50s range. And I think that's interesting because that signifies a change in approach. And maybe it is because he's just seeing the ball better and he can make better swing decisions. But the fact that he's being aggressive, I think I just hate, you know, I talked about, like, I always call it like the Dan Vogelbach problem, right? Like these guys who have great O swing percentages and don't chase, but it's like you're not being aggressive on the pitches that you can do damage on. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think we see a lot of players like that. And Muncy was kind of like that high 50s, low 60s range is kind of like just bordering on the range of being too passive. But we're seeing this increased aggressiveness from him. And I think this is real. Like, I think what we're seeing, I kind of compared it. His season reminds me a lot of Eugenio Suarez last year. Mm-hmm. Remember with Suarez, everybody was like, ah, this guy's done. He's just a power only guy, batting average drain. Like the Diamondbacks were considering like DFAing him. And I know people were dropping him all over in fantasy. Mm-hmm. Feels very similar with Muncy. You know, people just kind of wrote him off, and now we're just seeing what looks like a change in approach. And I mean, if he goes anything on a run, anything like what Suarez did last year, he could end up winning people some leagues. So definitely, I think he's probably scooped up everywhere, but I think like 10 teamers, he should be rostered. Like, I think he should be universally owned. Mm-hmm. We're going to leave it there for hitters. We'll talk about a few pitchers, but first we're going to take a quick commercial break. All right, we are back talking some pitchers who have been hot, who've been showing some really good skills over the past 30 days. And we are going to start with Spencer Schwellenbach. And why I wanted to point him out is that he is actually, this really surprised me because I know he's been pitching well lately, but his Sierra, which is Skills Interactive ERA, it's one of what I think is the best ERA predictor out there. His Sierra over the past 30 days is number one in baseball. I lost the page. I think it's 2.51. So I wanted to ask you, I'll start with, send this to Dave first. It's a 2.31 Sierra. There it is. Actually right in front of Grant Holmes, his teammate. But with Schwellenbach, Dave, where would you put him rest of season? Do you think he is like a firm SP1, or do you have any concerns or things that make you think that he maybe is not quite at that level yet?
I would put him as either a low end SP1 or a high end SP2. I was worried earlier in the year and even before, just with workload concerns, and he's got so many pitches. I just didn't know if, you know, he doesn't really have a wipeout pitch right now. Everything is, seems about the same, but maybe it's good in the sense that, you know, he keeps batters guessing. I love his elite walk rate, though. It is so nice to see like a 4% walk rate. You drafted him as such, so I think you got to keep him there. I put him in the top 20 for sure, and I could probably be convinced for top 15.
Hmm. All right, all right. I'm trying to find the I'm not ignoring you, Dave. I'm just trying to find the Debbie Downer. We got to have just like the audio clip of, you know, the sound that they make every time the character comes on. Yeah, that's just, we need that for every time you discuss a player. I love it, man. But you know, you keep us in check, so that's good. Let's talk about probably the oldest, I think next to Verlander maybe, the oldest player in the major leagues. Naturally, I've got to give this to you, Mike, and ask you about Charlie Morton, showing a 21% K minus walk percentage over the last 30 days. Is he a 12 team guy? Like, I mean, he had that break. You know, old men need breaks. It's just, we know this, right? So he started out, he was getting old, he was getting tired, gave him a break in the bullpen. Now he's back. Last, you know, few starts have been excellent in terms of his skills. Is he someone you're looking at as a 12 team option, or do you think it's, you know, something that we should just, he's just too old, he's not going to sustain this?
Well, you're an ageist.
I am 100%.
We're going to start there.
Yeah.
He's actually pretty close to your age. In truth,
don't say that. Yeah.
Remind me. He's closer to your age than mine. But I'm way older than you. But no, Morton was a guy that I actually started adding a couple weeks back. And when really? when they put him back into the rotation, you know, he had the one start, you know, he was in the bullpen, like you said. He came out and made a start. I think it was against the Cardinals, and he looked pretty good. I had that game on. He went six innings. I think he struck out five or six guys. And then the last couple starts, he's been – well, he had the one Debbie Downer one against the Athletics. But he was really good against my White Sox. And then he was excellent against the Angels last weekend. He only threw five innings. He had 10 strikeouts. The thing that you got to worry about with Morton always is the control. The walks can really kind of come back and bite him. Home runs usually impact him too. But the thing that's been interesting about it since he's been back in the rotation, he's only given up, I think, two home runs, I think, over the course of his last six starts. And so he's minimizing the damage. You know, if you look at the overall statistics for the season, you're going to pass on him. But if you look at what he's done over the last month or so, he's got two wins in June, in three starts in June, with a 2.57 ERA, 22 strikeouts, and 14 innings. I'll take it. Thank you very much.
Man, kudos to you for being like ahead of that and picking him up in advance. Because
I love him. He knows how to pitch, and I know that I say that all the time. Like, when you have a dearth of options, I've had a ton of injuries in a couple of my pitching staffs. And when you have a guy that's going to get some opportunity, who's done it before at a really high level, I mean, this guy won game seven of the World Series not that long ago, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a guy that knows what he's doing. I don't know how long it's going to last, but he's throwing the curveball more than what he's throwing anything else at this point. I mean, I think he's throwing his curveball about 37% of the time. He's still got a pretty good fastball too, guys, which is interesting. He's 41 years old. He still throws 94, 95 pretty regularly. So I think once he figured out, you know, getting the feel for the curveball in the cold, in the, you know, the weather in Baltimore is odd, and, you know, before the summer hits, it's cold and damp, and then it's, you know, really warm and humid there in the summertime. I'm willing to kind of ride this for a little while. Now, I'll say that, and probably the wheels will fall off. I think he's pitching tomorrow night.
No, I think he's actually pitching tonight. I was just looking. Yeah, I hate that. I hate because we record on Thursdays, and then we release on Saturdays. So we'll like talk and have a take on a player, especially a pitcher, like, and then they'll pitch that day or on the Friday, you know, after we record, and then it like throws out everything we just said or makes us look silly, which, you know, comes with the territory, I guess. But so we'll see. If Morton doesn't get bombed today, if, you know, it's a tough start in Tampa Bay, I think next week he's viable at home against Texas because they don't have a great offense. And yeah, I'd roll with him definitely in 15 teamers, I think. All right, let's look at Will Warren. So if you look at another guy, you look at Will Warren and you look at the surface stats, and we're talking about the starting pitcher from the Yankees here. If you look at the surface stats, it's not pretty. He's got a 5.14 ERA over the last 30 days. But, you know, again, if we look deeper at the skills, and Sierra helps us do that, he's got a 3.05 Sierra, which indicates he's been really, really good. If you're really factoring in just things that pitchers can control, like strikeouts and walks, so I say pick him up. He's got two home starts lined up, at home against the Orioles and Athletics for his next two. So definitely if he is, don't look at that ERA, just know that this is someone who's been getting unlucky. The BABIP is really high in the 350s. This is someone that is showing the skills, and you know, he's on a good team, good chance it wins. So definitely someone, if he's available in your leagues, pick him up. Last guy, I just wanted to note quickly, Chad Patrick. I don't know, man. Like, I looked at Chad Patrick earlier this year, and I'm like, ah, he's just a Brewers guy. You know, like, mm-hmm. The Brewers have these guys that just, like, they're just like a Tobias Myers. Or, you know, like, these mm-hmm. crafty guys they get the most out of, not super great skills. They find a way to cobble together, like, a 4-something ERA with, like, a passable whip. You know, nothing exciting. But just want to note on Chad Patrick, 20% K minus walk percentage over the last 30 days. He might be good, kind of. I don't know. But anyway, someone to look at. I don't have the matchups in front of me, but I think someone definitely worth streaming in a lot of leagues. All right. Next segment here. We're going to – this is Dave's bread and butter. Here we go. The negativity. He's going to talk injuries. His favorite thing in the world. Dave loves nothing more. Nothing more, I'm convinced, than sending us a text telling us about somebody who's out for the season. Like, you tell me, Dave, do you receive any more satisfaction from anything else in your life more than that?
Here's what I have to say about that. Did that come through?
No,
it did not. It was the Debbie Downer muse. The song.
Oh,
the
man.
Oh,
never mind. All right. Well, maybe you could edit it in. I don't know. But anyway, let's talk injuries. You wanted to talk about or start out talking about Alex Bregman.
Yeah. So Alex Bregman, you know, he had the quad strain and he compared it to the one that he had in 2021 where he lost 2 months of time. Now he's a bit older. He's on the wrong side of 30. So he's been out a while, but he's improving. He could actually miss a rehab assignment when he feels better. He was set to undergo testing the other day. Probably by the time this is released, we'll know exactly what came of that. But he's resumed running, and it's only at a 50% intensity right now. So his next step will be acceleration, and then I guess they'll go from there. It's an injury that I'm watching because the state of the Red Sox lineup, there's a lot of question marks, and there's, you know, after the Devers trade, it doesn't feel like they have that one guy that they can put in there and count on to just drive in some runs or have some power. So it's an important injury, and the quicker he gets back, the better it is for the Red Sox. Two other injuries I'm looking at. Cole Reagans, he just suffered the rotator cuff strain. It felt like he came back a little bit early from his groin strain, and he didn't really look like himself when he did return. It's possible maybe he was overcompensating, and that might have been what happened with his shoulder here. But I know he had some reduced velocity last year as well, which was somewhat worrisome. Ann Rogers, reporter for the Royals, came out and said that he had a second opinion, which they're usually bad, but she actually said it was a pretty good piece of news because he's going to be shut down for 2 more weeks and then he'll be reevaluated. So We'll find out in a couple weeks whether or not, you know, the rest was enough or they had to do something else. But this is another injury I'm watching because I think that the Royals rotation, I think they need him. They have good pitchers. They've got Lugo. They've got Bubich, who's been a bit shaky as of late. They got Noah Cameron and Michael Wacha. But they just don't have that guy that you can set it and forget it. That guy that goes out there and he's going to win the game for you. So if they're going to do anything, I think they really need a guy like Reagans. And they might find out before the trade deadline whether or not they need to go out and try and get someone. And then the last injury that I'm watching is Jackson Merrill. It was kind of a scary situation on the weekend when he suffered that concussion. And for me, the scary part was the look on his face when he was when he got up. And it was also alarming how quickly players from the other team were calling out for the trainers. So as of Tuesday, he still has headaches. He still had some nausea. And he was reasonably normal, as the manager said, but there are lingering effects. And it is an important injury because that lineup has a lot of question marks without him. They've got Tatis and Machado, which is great. And Luis Arias, he gets on base, but Gavin Sheets, can you really trust him to continue hitting like he's been?
No.
No. Xander Bogaerts, he's been awful this year. And the bottom three of their lineup, this was in the other day, it was Trenton Brooks, Elias Diaz, and Bryce Johnson.
Yikes.
That's not going to win you much of anything in real life or fantasy. So it's they really need him back. And those are the three that I'm watching. Alex Bregman, Cole Reagans, and Jackson Merrill.
Did you guys see the screenshot that someone posted on Twitter the other day of when Gavin Sheets faced Jack Dreyer? And someone captioned it, or they said laundry day. You know, it says Sheets.
Yeah, Dreyer Sheets.
Like, man, that stuff really, like, I love that. I don't know. I'm just a nerd, man. I like fried rice. Like, if Max Fried throws to Ben Rice as his catcher, like, that'll just blow my mind. If you're going to see, you know, or I think it actually happened last year. He faced him, you know, when you saw fried rice on the screen. I don't know. I have a, it drives me. I actually like it. But anyway, we're going to talk bullpens with Mike here. And hopefully, can you give us some positivity, man? Let's go away from this Debbie Downer, the Davey Downer, and give us something that fantasy managers can latch onto, some pickups that maybe we can make in some of these crazy bullpens. Let's start with Philadelphia. What's going on there?
Yeah, Philly's an interesting situation right now with a full-blown committee, it looks like, this week. Jordan Romano was the guy they really wanted to see take this role on. He's been really inconsistent at best, as you guys know. He leads the team with 8 saves, but he's been really pretty lousy the last few weeks. This week, what's been interesting to watch is that Matt Strom has 2 saves, and Orion Kerkerian had a save as well. And a lot of people in the Philly system believe in Kerkerian as a guy that can end up being their closer. There were some rumors. You know, we've talked about David Robertson quite a bit on this show. there were some rumors when Alvarado was getting suspended and put on the restricted list that they had reached out to David Robertson, but it sounds like those talks never became very serious. It sounds like David Robertson's asking for a lot of money, and I don't know that anybody's willing to give a 40-year-old reliever that money, even though he's a proven commodity. So Strom has two saves and a hold this week. Orion Kerkerian has a win, a hold, and a save, so he's got a little bit of a trifecta going there. But I really think that Strom is probably the go-to for now. You know, I think they're going to try to put Romano into some maybe lower leverage situations and see if they can kind of rebuild him. If you look at the Phillies roster, their bullpen really isn't very good. They've got that big three of Romano, Strom, and Kerkerian, but they're using Taijuan Walker as a middle reliever. Tanner Banks is, you know, the definition of mediocre in the middle there. Joe Ross, who you guys might remember as a starter for many years. They just don't have a lot of options there right now. It's kind of surprising. I think a lot of people thought the bullpen was going to be a strength of this team, and it's actually been a bone of contention. So I would look for Strom at this point to have a slight edge over the others. Kerkerian's situation where he got the save was on a night where Romano pitched and got a hold, and Strom got a hold, and Kerkerian came in at the end and pitched the ninth. They used Strom and Romano in a tighter situation, and Kerkerian got the save. I don't want to read too much into that yet, you know. So if right now I think we're looking at Matt Strom, for better or for worse. The other team that I really wanted to point out, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, you know, we talked about Reed Detmers, and, you know, we've talked about Reed Detmers a lot in our podcast as a starter and somebody that we maybe were interested in, but he's really been a killer setup man in Los Angeles. And if you look at the statistics, you're not going to see it. You know, you see a 4.88 ERA, you see a guy that's got two saves and six holds. You're like, Mike, what's the big deal? Well, he's got a 29.6% strikeout rate. And since he's been moved to the bullpen, he's been lights out. His fastball has added like three ticks to it since he's been moved to the bullpen from the rotation. It seems like he's found a home there. And so my thought on that was, you know, if the Angels decide to move on from Kenley Jansen, who's actually been pitching quite well, I don't know if you guys are aware of that or even care, but he's got his ERA down to 4.5. It had been as high as 6.5 a little bit more than a month ago. And he's got 15 saves on the season, throwing one pitch 80% of the time. Crazy. If they decide to move on from Jansen, Detmers would be the clear choice, I think, as closer. But like I said, probably what will happen is they'll end up trading Detmers and keeping Kenley Jansen because the Angels are going to angel.
Exactly. Yep.
And Chris, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about your favorite bullpen in all of baseball, which is the Texas bullpen.
I'm done with it.
Well, right. I just gotta tell you. So Robert Garcia and Luke Jackson both have saves this week. So I think it's safe to call that a co-closer situation. Garcia did blow a save, I think it was on Monday night. But your favorite relief pitcher, Chris Martin, the lead singer of Coldplay in his free time, who's also pitching, it got hurt again last night. So he's injured. I don't know what the nature of the injury is, but it looks like a timeshare between Garcia and Jackson right now. There's another guy there that is drawing some interest who was a starter for a long time there named Cole Wynn. Cole Wynn with two N's is a guy to kind of earmark for later. He's somebody that could have an advanced role later on in the season.
All right, give me 30 seconds on the Yankees, because I'm and we may know by the time this actually gets released, because I think Luke Weaver's coming back tomorrow. So if they have a save opportunity, we'll see. But what are your thoughts? I mean, Devin Williams has pitched really well since Weaver was on the IL, but are they going to just say, well, tough luck, Luke? You know, like you got hurt and you lost your job. I don't know, man. Like, I'm interested to hear what you have to say about that.
My hunch is that I think, and I've had people ask me about this, and I don't have any inside knowledge on this. I don't have Aaron Boone's ear on this at all.
Oh, you don't? What? I thought you were his confidant. What are we doing here?
I wish I was, because I would be giving him a little bit different advice than what he's been taking from other people. I would tell you that.
Yeah.
I think that they have to stick with Devin in the closer role. They're paying him to be the closer. He's been outstanding in June. You know, he's got a 1.35 ERA, a WHIP of 0.6, 10 strikeouts in six and two thirds innings, and four saves. The Yankees are better, and I'll leave it at this: the Yankees are better with Weaver in the multi-inning role as a stopper and Williams as the closer. That's the way they want it set up. I think that's the way that they're going to keep it. I don't see any wisdom in now saying, oh, you know what? Thanks, Devin. You bailed us out for a while, but now we're going to go back to Luke Weaver. I don't think it's going to go that way. I think Weaver will be that two-inning guy, the multi-purpose guy that they use to stop rallies and bridge the gap, and then they'll go to Williams. The other thing that I've been interested about too, Chris, you know, and I'm not a Yankees fan, but I do see quite a few Yankees games on the MLB Network, is Loaisiga really kind of coming back and looking – the strikeout stuff's not there, but he's actually looked pretty good. They don't use him every day, but he's somebody that could be heard from before this is all said and done too.
All right. Very good. Hey, quick update on the White Sox. Benintendi, grand slam, baby.
I know it. I know
high
it.
Game, 6-6.
They lost the first one, but they just scored 5 runs to tie up there. I'm hopeful. I remain hopeful.
You know, I have Benintendi on both of my main event teams. And he was a guy I swore off last year. I can't stick to my word, but believe it or not, like he's actually that second half he had last year where he started to really try to pull the ball in the air, that's carried over. And I think there's actually like he's viable in definitely 15 teamers. Dare I say 12? No, not at 12. He's not good enough. But anyway, he's better than I thought. So we're back on the Benintendi train. We'll probably be having the same conversation next year about Jordan Walker because I just can't stay away from some players. But anyway, we are going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be back with our mental health minute. All right, we are back. Mike, you had put together the topic for today. So if you don't mind, if you could kind of kick it off for us.
Yeah, for sure. So you know, June is Men's Mental Health Month, and it's a big deal, and I'm glad that we're talking about that. I'm glad that we talk about it on here every week. My question for you guys tonight is, how do you reach out to someone and support, you know, a guy friend, a male friend that you might have who you know is struggling? It doesn't have to necessarily always be something that's really grandiose or something that's big, but we all have friends. We all see friends struggle. We sometimes can pick up on those signs that they're not doing well. Walk us through, if you can, how you have that tough conversation and maybe some of the language that you might use. Dave, I'll start with you there on that one.
Well, for me, it's more or less, I try and just show them that, you know, A, it's okay. B, I try and turn it around on myself to just show that, you know, sometimes with examples about how I might be struggling or how I might be feeling, just to try and ease the, not the transition, but the way that they might be feeling if they're getting their back up or they might not want to share, just to show that it's a safe place, it's a safe space, and that I'm here for you and that I might understand what you're going through because, you know, I've gone through similar things before like that too. And I just do my best to try and relate to them that it's normal, it's okay, and that this is something that you'll be able to get through and that I'm here for you. And I don't force people to tell me, you know, that something is wrong, even if it's not wrong. Maybe I miss, you know, calculating this, what's going on, but I just try and open that gate and show that it's a two-way street and that I'm here for you. Here's what I might be going through. If you ever need to repay the favor that way, you know, like talk to me. I'm here for you. And I just try and leave it at that.
No, I like that a lot. Chris, how about you? You know, obviously know you're a therapist. I know you see some male clients, but this kind of goes past that. It's the idea of, you know, when you know that you have a friend, not work related, but when you know that you have a friend that's maybe struggling with something, how do you go about that? I mean, obviously you have the advantage, I guess, in some ways of being a therapist, but that can also be a disadvantage sometimes when you're reaching out to people who know what it is that you do. If you're reaching out to a friend, how might you handle that?
Yeah. I tell them, bro, I'm off the clock, man. Come on. none of this emotion, feeling stuff, you know, I ain't got time for that. No. I don't know. I mean, I think I echo a lot of what Dave said, like in terms of just like opening that door, you know, and I think an even deeper issue is having a relationship that is more than surface level. And a lot of people struggle with this, you know, like a lot of us have guy friends and some relationships just are what they are, right? Like maybe it's just a guy that you know, get a beer with every once in a while, or you go golfing with every once in a while, and that's it. But for some people, that's like the extent of all of their relationships, you know? And I think there's got to be in some relationships in your life that have some level of emotional intimacy, you know, where you are open and sharing, like, you know, listen, it doesn't have to be like the most personal things, but where there's some like depth there. Where you know, you are sharing, you know, not afraid to like express emotion around them, you know? So I think it starts there is like, just like finding those relationships where you can have some, a deeper relationship, you know, or some friends that you have a deeper relationship with. And then, yeah, just kind of like, I think if you have that foundation, then it kind of invites, if that person is struggling, it invites, you know, that opportunity for them to reach out to you. You know, I mean, I did it with you this past week, right? Like I reached out to you because, you know, was going through some stuff with like parenting stuff, which we talked about last week. And, you know, that was fresh in my mind. And I was like, yeah, Mike would be like, He'd be the perfect support with this situation. You gave me great advice, like, and I felt great. So, you know, it just like you have to have those relationships in your life, though, and kind of keep also like what Dave was saying, though, keep that door open and also look out for warning signs too, like signs that the other person, like if they're not all of a sudden you don't hear from them for a month and you're used to hearing from them, or if you just notice like something's off, like. Don't be afraid to say, hey, man, just I noticed like something's a little different with you. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just wanted to point that out to you and leave it at that. Then it's their choice. Right. Then they could decide how much they want to disclose. But yeah, so those are my thoughts. A little all over the place, but those are my thoughts.
No, I like that. And thanks for saying what you said. I mean, I was happy to have that conversation and it actually kind of made my day, you know, so I was really excited to be able to try to pass on something that maybe I know a little bit about, maybe not. The one thing that I would add to what both you guys are saying is that what we don't recognize a lot of times in men's mental health is men have a tendency to push a lot down and bury a lot of stuff. And then little things start to kind of percolate up that really show that somebody's struggling with their mental health. Right. And it comes out as anger or it comes out as hurt. And it might be over something that's really small or a little thing. Like I found myself a couple of weeks ago, I lost my absolute mind because my kids keep sticking stuff in the garbage can and they just press it down, push stuff in. Instead of taking the garbage out and putting it by the back door where one of us could take it out, they keep smashing stuff into it. And I lost my religion, man. I got so angry. I was like, and I was using vulgarity and I became upset. And it really had nothing to do with that situation. That was just the microcosm of what I was feeling during the course of that day. I had a really overwhelming day at work. There was a number of things that happened. And I realized when I got home after that happened, I then had to apologize because I yelled at everybody in my house. And I thought, you know, nobody cares about how I'm feeling as a guy. My family does, obviously, but nobody cares how I'm feeling until I lose my stuff. And then it's like, oh, now dad's just being a jerk. Right. And so we kind of have to balance that with the idea like, hey, what do we need to do for ourselves to make sure that we handle those situations the right way? And when it comes to our friends, you know, I recently had a friend who struggled with alcoholism. He's been clean for and sober for a long time now, but his father passed away and it was rather tragic and very difficult. And I just reached out to him and I said, look, I know this might not be a great time to talk. I just want you to know I'm thinking about you. And when you're ready to talk, I'm here.
Yeah.
And it was about a week later and we had a conversation about it. And people get nervous about that, right? Because they'll be like, oh, Mike, what do I say? Just talk. Just be there for your friend. Just be supportive. Let them talk about what it is that they want to talk about. Maybe use a little bit of light humor. Maybe don't bring Debbie down or Dave into the conversation. You know, anything that you might be able to do to help somebody out. But the thing I would say is don't stop trying. Don't stop trying to reach out to friends, people that you've known for a long time that were good friends who might go quiet for a little while. They might let go radio silence, but always keep trying. That doesn't mean you should ever stop. And so that's, I think, where I wanted to leave it there in terms of how we deal with male friends who might be struggling. There's not a lot of roadmaps for these things. So I think that's something that we need to talk about. And I'm really glad that we talk about it as part of the show every week, guys.
Yeah. One last point I just wanted to highlight that you brought up is the idea of anger being like kind of like for men, that's the acceptable way, right? For men to express like when they're not doing well emotionally, right? So we're talking about signs that someone may be struggling. You know, some people just have anger problems, right? Mm-hmm. Like they've had it their whole life.
Sure.
But like, you know, someone like for you, like you kind of freaking out like that, I assume that's not like an everyday thing, right? So that's like an indication that something is going on that's probably being unresolved. So like if you're seeing that in somebody that you're close with, like they're just more on edge, they're irritable, like then I think it's like a good time to ask, all right, is something going on here? You know, because that's usually that's how we express mm-hmm. it. And then men tend to just stuff it down and then they explode.
Yep.
So and that could have all kinds of negative repercussions. So but anyway, we will leave it there. Good stuff. Thanks for bringing that topic, Mike. We are going to leave it there for the show this week. We'll be back next week. We're supposed to have a guest this week. They didn't work out. Hopefully next week. We'll see. But hopefully that you got something out of this episode that is helpful for you both, either fantasy or in real life. Anyway, for Dave Funnel, for Mike Carter, my name is Torres. You've been listening to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
You're enjoying your day, everything's going your way, then along comes Debbie Downer. Always there to tell you about a new disease, a car accident, or killer bees. Blue banger to spare you, Debbie, please, but you can't